Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Studio G and the Discussions for Women in Leadership. We will continue our focus this week on how the styles and the principles of an Omega leader can influence leadership. Here this week we have Lori Beth Jones, speaker, author of 14 books, and the book leading our discussion today, Jesus CEO. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you.
Representing the business pillar is Vicky Arteaga. Welcome, Vicky.
Hello, how are you doing?
Doing well. And Elisa Holston, representing the education pillar. Welcome, Elisa.
Good evening. Glad to be here.
These weekly shows that we're hosting on developing women in leadership have become a passion for each of us here at Studio G. And so this week, as we move into the show, our focus on being an Omega leader is around the concept of the Omega Leader's Call. And so before we jump into that, we'd like to just kind of frame out our definition of what an Omega leader is. And so we turn to Lori Beth, the individual that has coined those words, and she's going to define for us what that means.
Well, the Omega leader is a leader who transcends and combines both the alpha and the beta style of leadership. Alpha meaning authoritative, take charge, military, my way or the highway, and beta is more of the cooperative, how shall we do this, collaborative style. And Jesus demonstrated both of those, and at the same time, he was always connected and in obedience to a higher power, which was his Father God. So to me, an Omega leader is someone who can be alpha when needed, who can be beta when needed, but is always in a space of being submitted to God.
Wow, great definition. I love that definition every time I hear it, every week. And so as we begin to our search, our understanding of how an Omega leader is called this week, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind, Lori Beth, is oftentimes we struggle with what we feel, what we think, what we're told, what even might be assumed to be our calling. How does an individual get to the point of understanding the word calling, and is that word still relevant for where we are today? How powerful is that word calling?
Well, there's a difference between getting a job and finding your calling. My new book, Jesus Career Counselor, which will be out in this spring, I talk a lot about that. That some people just go get a job, and many of them are herded into career fields by default. They're parents told them what they should be, or they got in the shortest line at college admissions, which, believe it or not, I know a number of people that just took the shortest line and ended up with a career. And a calling comes from the Latin root vocare, which means called forth. And the Omega leader has a sense of destiny, a sense of importance in God's scheme, that they are sent there for a reason, for a specific time, such a time as this. Not in a grandiose, you know, I'm God's gift here, but more like God has me in this space for a reason, and it's my job to find out what that space is and what it's going to look like. And as I was preparing for the show, I had a number of quotes that came to mind. One is, I think it was Albert Schweitzer who said, your work in life is to find your work and then live it out with joy. And so many people don't make it work to find their work. They just go to work. So there's a difference there. And, you know, one of the phrases that I most want to hear when I get to heaven is, well done, good and faithful servant. Well, what is well done? Is it my task, or did I do a good job on the painting of the house, or what was it? It's a life well lived. And Jesus, when he said it is finished, what was finished? It was his work on earth. He didn't say, I'm done, I'm out of here. you know, take this job and shove it. He said, it is finished, the Omega completion, the fulfillment of calling. And so the Omega leaders, it's our responsibility to search for that path and find it. God's not, sometimes God puts us in front of it. You know, we're going to talk, I know, about the burning heart, the burning house, and the burning bush. But while I'm speaking about bushes, I love bougainvillea plants. Maybe many of you are familiar with them. They live in the south, and they do have thorns, but they are just a cascade of color, the pink and magenta. And there's some homes in Coronado that, you know, these multi-million dollar homes, and they're just covered with bougainvillea. And when I looked up the plant, it's actually classified as a weed. And when I looked up what weed means, a weed is any plant that the gardener feels is unwanted.
Hmm.
So, and I thought about that as leaders, that God, you know, surprised us when he called Jesus, the young carpenter, out of a town that nobody, you know, even knew was on the map, or they laughed at it when they did know where it was. So, and I started thinking about all the leaders who were treated as weeds. Nelson Mandela in jail. You know, Joseph was thrown out by his brothers. You can think of current political leaders and past great leaders that we've had who were unwanted or treated as being unwanted, treated like weeds, and yet they're blossoming and they're blooming, brought glory to God. So right off the bat, I just wanted to say that, you know, maybe you're feeling like you're just a weed, particularly when you compare yourself to others, but God doesn't see that in you. God sees the blossom in you, and you are not unwanted. You are dearly loved and wanted.
And what a great, a beautiful plant, the bougainvillea
is. Oh,
yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because, you know, the bougainvillea is also one of my favorite plants. And I have a friend that we have a couple of bougainvilleas in our backyard. And she told us, do not plant them in the soil, you know, just get a pot or something and plant it there because bougainvilleas expand wild. And it's amazing. It's interesting that it's considered weed. And you know how whoever needs to do some yard work understands that getting rid of weeds is very hard. So what are the characteristics of a weed, but in this case it's a blossom, it's a beautiful weed, that is very resistant, very resilient, and can expand. How do you parallel that to the characteristics of a leader?
Well, the persistence and tenacity of the bougainvillea, and it's always reaching out. It just amazes me. I have one on my deck, and I can be gone for a week or 2 weeks, and there's a whole new branch that's maybe 3 feet long that has just always reaching out to grab onto something, trying to find something to grab onto. And I think that is an Omega principle, which is a beautiful question that you just asked, Vicki, is the tenacity of digging in deep in the soil and constantly reaching out to find a new area of influence, a new area of service. That is the bougainvillea way. We have a new thing, the bougainvillea way.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that the perspective that you're bringing. Yesterday on NPR, there was a gentleman who was being interviewed, and he was talking about kind of the geeks are taking over the world. And in your book, Jesus CEO, where you kind of introduce this idea of, you know, just the call and how the Omega leader responds to his call, you preface it by referencing just kind of society, what society superimposes in terms of what a leader is or what a person should be, what's desirable, what's not desirable. And they were talking how geeks have kind of been in the background all along, responsible for the greatest movies and this and that. And all of a sudden, rather than being people like Bill Gates, rather than being behind the scenes, are now moving out in front and taking on a more leadership role. So there's a little bit of a shift in society. And I guess my question is, how does the Omega leader, wherever they're coming from left field, from right field, from Geekville, from whereverville, how do they overcome those stereotypes of society, those barriers that society might put in front of them? Because they don't look like they're supposed to look, or they're not as cool as they should be, or they're maybe not the stereotypical charismatic leader. How does one, what are some of those barriers, and how does the Omega leader overcome those barriers in pursuing her call?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to do is recognize that we have one boss. And for women particularly, I think it's challenging because we tend to feel like we need to serve everyone. We're conditioned and cultured that way, and it's a beautiful thing in many ways. And in other ways, I think it can hinder us. My mind just flashed on a show I saw yesterday on The Middle, and her little boy finally learned to make sandwiches for himself, and then her aunt calls her elderly aunt, and she can't see anymore, and she needs her to make sandwiches. And so here's this woman in the middle, you know, she just got her kid raised, and now she's got to take care of her elderly aunt. Mm-hmm. And I think for women that's always a conditioning that we do have to overcome. So if you would be kind enough to repeat your question, I just started flashing on that.
Okay. My question is that, you know, yes, your introduction and NPR's interview yesterday about kind of the geeks taking over the world and your preface about just the image that society superimposes on what one should look like, how one should behave, kind of the image of the leader is that charismatic, out front, you know, kind of smooth, and so sometimes perhaps someone rising in leadership or aspiring towards leadership or responding to her call might be discouraged because she doesn't fit into that mold. And so how does the Omega leader respond to her call when she doesn't look like society wants a leader to look like?
Yeah. Well, the goal, I mean, first of all, you have to have a relationship with God, and you have to recognize that is who you serve. And that's where I was coming from when I got sidetracked with the sandwiches. You know, you serve God. That's one boss, and that's the only boss you need to please. And it's the only one who, in Christianity, you know, we believe in accountability, and they also did in the Egyptian culture. Someone weighed their heart before they could cross the river, see if their heart was pure or not. So the first thing, I think, is to realize that you have one boss, and then ask yourself, what does God want me to do? And the anointing qualifies you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back to the burning heart, your passion can set you on a path to leadership. I'm thinking of the woman who founded MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Her house, she had a burning house. Her house burned down when her daughter was killed by a drunk driver. And she used that pain and like a phoenix came out of the ashes and moved into this movement that has just really impacted legislation and the whole society of, you know, accepting drunks for just being who they are. And this
exactly,
woman,
recognizing them, yeah, recognize it for what it is.
So,
yeah.
So she came in through the burning house, and then the burning heart is like Moses when there's a passion and you cannot stop thinking about something, and, you know, you just have to move towards it. Many of the people, I know a lot of the women in Congress, but many of them, well, I'm thinking of the former mayor of San Diego. She started out as a school teacher. She got mad because the city council wouldn't give her a permit to let her kids use the city building after hours. And the next thing you know, she became mayor. And pretty soon they wanted her to be governor and all that. And she ended up, you know, deciding that mayor was enough. But her burning heart took her there. And then the burning bush is when you have a passion that will not go away, even though it's 20 years old or 30 years old or something that just really, that's when you hear the voice of God calling you in something that will not go away.
Speaking of God's voice, you know, I think someone is in my field, I've always sensed that I've had a call, I've had a vocation. I think certain fields obviously lend themselves maybe more to it than others. But even in the midst of that, even though strongly called as I feel it in what I do, there are times when I question and I doubt. And so how does one recognize the difference between a call and direction from God versus a sign from God that maybe they're on the wrong path? You know, how do I distinguish between self-doubt and a sign from God, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
Well, I think that everybody, you know, we talk about this in the PATH workshops, that there is a space called the creative tension zone. And Robert Fritz first talked about this in his book about creative technologies and the path of least resistance, and that when you move towards a mission, or let's say a goal, or for you perhaps it's a career, there's the launch, the lurch, the lessons, and the love. And that book is, which one, Shelley? The
Jesus Entrepreneur.
Jesus Entrepreneur. And I think, Vicki, you said you were reading that this week. But there's
launch.
Yeah, there's a launch phase when you're so excited and you just feel the call, and, you know, like Moses, go and set my people free. And he had all the power, and he gets all revved up, and then he goes to Pharaoh and he says, God says, let my people go. And Pharaoh looks at him and says, no. And then he's plunged into the lurch. And not only did he not get the result he thought he was going to get, but then the people, Pharaoh gets mad and starts doubling the workload of the Israelites. So now his own people, you know, they're saying, who made you the ruler? So he's not only getting it from Pharaoh, he's also getting it from the people he is trying to set free. And that had to be a very uncomfortable place. And maybe as a school principal, you yourself have felt that too. I came here to help you guys. We don't want you to be our leader.
Never mind.
Familiar. Story of my life.
Yeah. And then the lurch, then you move into the lessons. And that's where you begin to see, what is it I need to know more of? What, or maybe the people need the lessons, or maybe Pharaoh's heart was hardened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those things were true in this story. So you move from the launch to the lurch to the lessons, and then when you have assimilated the lessons, then you move into the love, which is when Jesus was on the Mount of Transfiguration, and he was with his buddies, and he was talking to Elijah, and that's when God said, you know, well done, good and faithful servant. And that, I mean, Jesus was, he became almost invisible. He was transformed in that moment because he was doing exactly what he came here to do, exactly with the people he wanted to be with. And God was with him exactly in that moment. But that was a moment. And then he had to come back down the mountain and deal with people worried about where they were going to eat and who got the corner office and all of those things. So with the creative tension zone, when you're moving towards the mission, the closer you get to a breakthrough with it, the worse it's going
to feel. Yeah.
And I think that's why you need to write your mission down, you generally, not you specifically.
But okay, I will.
Yeah.
Okay, we will.
We will. You know, am I living my mission in this moment, no matter how it feels? And that's why it's so critical for the Omega leader to have a mission statement that they are clear about, that they have done the inner work to come to that point. Because if you're not, then you're just going to get knocked around like a weed or reed, and the weed shaken by the wind.
Yeah.
Powerful. And I think that you give an example of when you talk about the burning house with Queen Esther, it was very interesting because she had different timings, right? So in the beginning,
right,
she is, you know, just her uncle puts her in the position that she is going to be close to the king, but she doesn't say who she is or all that. So I'm imagining that she must be under a lot of pressure and fear, knowing what the political environment was at that point, and how they want to exterminate all the Jews. And now she's inside, but if she says she's a Jew, she could be killed.
Yeah.
So completely different kind of tension zone, that the tension zone you describe when David, like a burning heart, when he sees the giant just talking bad about God and all that. Does that have to do with the moment that you're living, with the personality that you have? Do every one of us are going to experience the same way? Moses, for example, I think he was surprised, and he was called to leadership by surprise. I mean, he was like, no, I don't want to go, you know. And David, on the other hand, he wanted to go, and Queen Esther, she was hesitant, but there was a point where she decided, you know, I have to do it.
Yes. And if the listeners would get the Jerusalem Bible, it has an expanded version of Esther's letter to God, which is so revealing. And in it, she just pours her heart out about how she just hates living there. She hates being basically a glorified harem girl. She hates having to be at the beck and call of the king, that she never wanted to be there. You know, it's just a very unhappy place for her. And then that famous phrase that Mordecai said is, who knows but that God has put you here for such a time as this. And I think that sometimes to the question, Elisa, that you were asking earlier, how do we know that it's a call? And it goes back to a theme that we've had in our past shows, is what will happen if I do not take action? Mm. And Mordecai said, if you do not take action, you will not be saved. Someone will rise up, but you and your house, including me, will be destroyed. So she had to weigh those options.
Yeah.
And when she did, I believe she was a double water, she went into just a brilliant strategy. Brilliant strategy. And basically saved the nation. The entire race would have been wiped out if a woman named Esther had not acted in an Omega leadership fashion.
Yeah, she prevented what would have been the first act of genocide in history. Yeah.
That's right.
And you mentioned the word strategy, and that to me is very key, because usually when you're in the tension zone, you might be thinking with your stomach instead of your brain.
Right. Right.
And, how our brain works, I learned this in a seminar, that the logical part is the frontal side of your brain. And whenever you feel that you're in trouble, you fear for your life, or you have that feeling of just fear, then there is another zone in your brain that it's a little bit at the side, like by the ear at that level. And that takes control. And what that does is sends all the blood to the extremities, to the legs and to the arms, to either fight or run. So the fact that a leader needs to be able, like Esther, to shut off the part that is concentrated on the fear and move back to the logical strategy to plan ahead and be effective in people.
Yes. And when you look at Esther's dilemma when she was presented with the challenge, and then you also look at Nehemiah when he was presented with his challenge, they both fasted and prayed. And I have never been a faster. I move fast, but I don't fast. But I have learned as a wind fire that I might act impulsively and I might do damage. And so I go ahead and maybe write out what my first thoughts are, and then I withdraw and I pray and I seek counsel, because I know that as a wind fire I can really destroy things. So that strategy of, okay, first you've got to identify clearly what is the challenge in front of you, and then fast, meaning pull back and pray, and then that's where you're going to get clear about strategy. And one of the things that Shelley and I have been working on is a decision matrix to help people make good decisions and using the elements. And the other thing that we worked on that I've been experimenting with some of my clients is that, and here's the line, you cannot solve a problem by staying in the emotion that you feel around it.
Exactly.
So, powerful. Yeah, if you're feeling very upset about something, that's fire. So you draw a quadrant with the fire, earth, water, and wind, one in each, and you say, okay, I'm feeling really upset about this, and I'm angry, and I want to hurt somebody. That's fire. But you'll
and
never
the problem
solve.
Is?
Right. Yeah. Problem is who? So then you say, okay, now the solution is not going to be in the fire quadrant. Going to be in the other three. So let's move to earth. What are the facts of the situation? And then you go to water. What are the relationships here that I can use as a resource? Or what are the relationships I want to preserve? Then you move into the wind. Okay, now it's time to move swiftly. What do I need to do now that I have the strategy in the earth water quadrant? But so many times we get stuck in, or maybe we're in the earth quadrant, we feel overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a water feeling. You're not going to solve the overwhelmed feeling by staying overwhelmed. You move into the other four quadrants, and that's how you develop a strategy. So we're very excited about this, and we're going to be doing some work in developing a product around it. But that was your question, Vicki, about strategy.
Yes, yes, and you just hit it right there in the point.
Yeah, very powerful. Once again, you've left me awed, humbled, and inspired.
Well, you know, I'd like to bring us back to this notion of calling. And, you know, as I've sat here tonight and kind of looked at this, maybe a process. I'm not sure if it is a process or not. But when you think of the burning heart, you know, that really is, that's probably more of a personal, a private stance. And when you look at the burning bush, you know, that could be in a public way. It could be speaking out the calling. It could be someone recognizing and asking you about your calling without you even inquiring to them or telling them that you're thinking about a particular next step in a career change, a new path, a new direction. And then the burning house, wow, that includes a lot of people. When you think of houses, you think there's often more than one person in the house. And so the calling is going to affect a lot of people, or it could affect or have an effect on a lot of people. And so as I have been here tonight in this discussion and dialogue about leadership, calling, women in leadership, and how we recognize our call, I'm not sure if it is a process, but very interesting. Lori Beth, the words that you've chosen in this particular book, Jesus CEO, about the Omega Leader's call, heart, bush, and house.
Right.
And I'm not sure that it requires any further dialogue, but it just struck me as interesting to be in a place and be in a space where, you know, and sometimes the call can change. And so revisiting the heart, revisiting the bush, and revisiting the house
might be
a place.
That's beautiful. And I think it's so important. The calling will be directly related to your highest gift. And you really need to be clear about what your highest gifts are. Marcus Buckingham has done a lot of work, Find Your Strengths, and I really support his work and what he's doing. And I was thinking the other day about my ability to write, and there's so many people who cannot articulate their emotions, who cannot express, and they have tremendous lives, and I was feeling so grateful, and also a sense of responsibility. The fact that I have been given the gift to write, it's also for the people, so that I can express people who don't have the voice, or, you know, express feelings, or emotions, or thoughts. So every gift has a responsibility. And then I just want to say that I was visiting with a dear friend of mine who was in a 3-day silent retreat. And she's a therapist, a very good therapist. And, of course, she's sharpening her sword. She's going and you know, taking care of herself and going deep. And I said, so what did you think about mostly during the retreat? She said, my hair. I was comparing my hair to everybody else's hair. On, you know, she has this baby fine silver hair. She said, people had thicker hair, longer hair, pretty hair. And we started laughing so much, and I said, there is something about that. And one of the greatest gifts she brings in therapy is humility and joy. I mean, she gets people laughing. And so, you know, a gift can be, it's something that we do every day that's so simple that other people can be blessed by it. So it's very important to find your gift and know it.
Thank you, Lori Beth, for taking us to this place this evening. Again, coming from Studio G this week, discussions for women in leadership. Heeding your call, finding your call, living your call, and making your call everything it's intended to be. So join us next week as we take a look at what it means to ask questions as an Omega Leader. For more information about Lori Beth and her resources, you can visit LoriBethJones.com. And we look forward to seeing each of you and interacting again here next week from Studio G. Have a great evening, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Shelley. Thank you.
Thank you.